So all across the country, students, parents, and educators are thinking about a new school year. And a new school year always makes me think of the same thing. School supply lists. You know, the list you get at the beginning of the year, or in your case, perhaps give out at the beginning of the year to let students know what they need to bring to school, what they need to be prepared. And I can remember vividly as a kid getting that list in the mail or in a little kiosk at the grocery store and looking through that list and sometimes wondering, what am I going to do with all of these things? Well, as educators, you have a lot of tools at your disposal as well, but you might not know which tools you need or how you're going to use them. And as we get ready for a period of remote and hybrid learning, it's all the more important to take a good look at the tools we use, how we use them, and why. So this week, we are talking to New Jersey-based EdTech coach and former educator Kyle Nemus. And as our guest speaker, Kyle's going to take us through his top five, his five favorite EdTech tools that you can use in the classroom this fall or at a distance. He's going to talk about the benefits, the philosophy behind it, and his perspective on what he keeps in mind when he chooses the tools he uses. So that's the topic, top five remote learning tools. We're going to dig into each one of them, and it all starts right now. Hey everyone, welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm Andrew Rausch. As I said, our guest speaker this week is Kyle Nemus calling in. So, without further ado, here's our conversation on his top five remote learning tools.
So my name is Kyle Nemus, and I am an EdTech coach in middle school in New Jersey. And I was a middle school science teacher for 12 years, and now this is going to be my third year as a tech coach. So my main role now is kind of supporting teachers. And of course, with everything going on, the role is ever changing. But ultimately, my job is to help teachers keep up with the crazy world that is EdTech and bring some of their dreams, some of their projects, some of their ideas to life.
When you think about your knowledge of EdTech and what you've done in EdTech, and you think about the kind of remote learning moment we've been in this year and are still trying to figure out, what like initial reflections do you have when teachers are getting ready to go back into the classroom? They're thinking about techniques and pedagogy. They're also thinking a lot about the tools they're using now. What's your take on the role of EdTech and how you've seen that change recently or over time?
Yeah. So, I mean, especially obviously recently over the last handful of months there, I would say what I've noticed as an ed tech coach is that teachers are really, really adaptable and they're really, really good at figuring things out if it makes their life easier. So whenever I work with teachers, as far as like, there's so many ed tech tools out there, I'm sure you've seen, right? There's, I mean, hundreds of tools. And I feel like I could easily, as the tech coach, totally fall into that trap of like, oh, try this tool and this tool and this does amazing stuff. But especially now, I mean, how we're all so overwhelmed trying to survive. So the last thing anyone needs is more stuff. So I really try to focus, and that's what we're going to talk about today on this episode. The tools that I think are simple to use and can hopefully make a big difference in your classroom across different contents and different grades. So I really try to only push out what I know is going to be the best and make teachers' lives a little bit easier. And I really think, especially now, that's what EdTech should do, is make teachers' lives easier, not be some one new thing on their plate.
Hmm. And when we think about these tools, you've also helped develop your own tool as well, not necessarily a remote learning tool.
Yep, I'm the co-founder of ClassroomQ. So if you're listening right now, maybe you've used it, maybe you haven't. We've only been around for a couple of years, but it's actually not super great for remote learning, but some people have been using it, which is cool. But in a nutshell, if you've never used it, what it is, it's like a digital hand-raising tool. So when you're in the classroom and kids need help, instead of flipping a cup or going up to the board to write their name, they click a button and you're notified. and it's you can easily kind of help your kids. So it's really one of those, like, I made it for my classroom because I needed it, and then turns out lots of other teachers also needed it too. So it's kind of been spreading like wildfire. So it's classroomq.com if you ever want to check that out.
That's interesting. You know, I think that aspect of you set out to solve a problem you had in your classroom. And as you say, it turns out a lot of other educators were looking for a similar solution. So as we think about some of the tools we might be using for remote and hybrid education, and we'll get into some of your favorites here shortly, what are the kind of lessons you take on tool design? Is that the direction it usually goes? There's a simple problem, someone tries to solve it, and then a bunch of other people say, oh, I also have this problem. Would you mind showing me?
You know, I think it depends on who develops it, if I'm going to be honest. So I don't know if you're familiar with GimKit, one of my favorite tools, and that was designed by a student, kind of the same idea. Like, he had a problem. He really wanted to make a game that was more fun. So, and GimKit is, I think, one of the most popular tools out there. So I think to be a good ed tech designer, I think you have to have the lens of the teacher and the student. And I think that those are the ones that do the best, because they know how to make people's lives a little bit easier and hopefully solve a problem that maybe you didn't even know existed. Like, think of our tool, ClassroomQ. Like, what if you're not in education, would you ever think to design something when you know that kids can just raise their hand no problem anyway? But if you're a teacher, you know that you're spending a lot of time kind of running around the classroom helping kids, and it'd be really great if things were a little bit more streamlined. So I think it depends on who is developing it and why they're developing it.
If you're thinking about tools to recommend to educators, what's on your mind? Take us through that.
I'm going to do my top five, if that's all right. And kind of the same way we just talked about, it should solve a problem. I'm going to present everyone starting off with the problem it solves, because to me, that's the main purpose. Because if you have this problem, hopefully it'll solve it. And if you don't have a problem, then this maybe isn't for you. But I have a hard time when someone's like, this is the best tool ever, because I think it depends on what problems and your unique situation. So I'll just do my best to tell you from my experience as an ed tech coach, the ones that I've seen the most successful, the ones that have worked with teachers most often with, and the problems that they solve. So, I would start the first one with a tool called Edpuzzle. Are you familiar with that one yet?
Yeah. I've actually used Edpuzzle before. It's a great kind of allows you to do assessments pretty easily, I believe.
Yeah. So it's really, really great, especially in this world right now where a lot of us are home and we're sending kids videos to watch. The problem it solves is so oftentimes, if you don't use Edpuzzle, you're sending them, let's just say, a YouTube video or a video you made, and you're like, I wonder if they even watched my video, or like, did they understand my video? Did they just fast forward right through it? So that's what Edpuzzle does. If you've never used it, the two main things it does is you can assign a kid a video right from YouTube or your own video, and it'll tell you that they watched it. It'll tell you exactly like how long they watched it for. But then what so many people do with it too is what's really cool is that like you can kind of put little like stopping points in the middle of the video. So hypothetically, so I was a science teacher. And so if I'm showing a video about, I don't know, DNA, and I know it was kind of a really tricky part, I can make the video stop right after the tricky part and ask them a question, multiple choice, short answer, just to kind of check for understanding. So on my teacher end, I can see how well they understood the material. So it's really dynamic in that sense, but it doesn't feel overwhelming on your side. You can just, it's really easy to see who watched it and things like that. So if you're sending videos out to your kids and you have that problem, I would highly recommend Edpuzzle. So it actually transitions great with my second tool. So a little sneak preview here, which is Screencastify. So I'm a big fan of, with Edpuzzle, making your own videos, even if it's not. So this is what a lot of my teachers have done. So instead of just simply content videos, it might be like, let's just say a writing teacher is giving directions for an assignment about whatever, a writing assignment. You said you're a writer, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I'm sure over your years, you've gotten a teacher to send you some sort of assignment for what you're supposed to write, and you might be a little confusing. So what my teachers have done is they've kind of recorded themselves giving directions to kids for certain things. And then they put it in Edpuzzle, almost kind of like a check for understanding, kind of like, all right, now tell me in your own words, what is the assignment actually supposed to do? Right. So it doesn't have to be just used with content. You can use it for simply given directions and just, again, an easy way to check to make sure that kids are getting what you're throwing out there. So that is just an area that I see happen all the time in my school.
Yeah, so Screencastify is a screencasting tool. And also now that could allow you to make your own custom videos that you could put into Edpuzzle with those sort of learning checks and assessments built in, or those stopping points, kind of combining the strengths of those two applications.
Yeah. So yeah, in the ed tech world, that's called the App Smash. So yes, it's a really nice App Smash. So Screencastify is my second tool on the list. And basically, what I say is there's so many tools out there, and I always get asked this: is like, all right, if you want to record yourself giving a lesson or record your PowerPoint or Google Slide or whatever's on your screen, which is the best tool? The most popular ones I always hear are Screencastify, Screencast-O-Matic, and then Loom. And so I think that you'll see people have their allegiances and they just kind of love their certain one. But if I'm going to recommend, if you're someone right now who's going into remote learning and you're like, I'm supposed to do videos, where do I begin? I recommend Screencastify because it is so simple to use out of all three. It's the simplest. But not only that, especially if you're a Google school, everything you make goes right to your Google Drive. So it just kind of automatically saves it, which is really, really great. And like I just said in the last one, it has options that you can send it right to Edpuzzle or Wakelet or some other popular tools out there. So it really lets you kind of smash things together, which is great. And the biggest negative that people say about it, the free version, is that it only lets you do 5 minutes at a time for video. But I would argue that that's actually not a bad thing. Especially if you're a beginner to this world of screencasting, because so often what I've seen people do, especially again, if you're a beginner, is you'll make like 20 minute videos and kind of really go on. And this kind of forces you to be right to the point and then, or even chunk it into a couple videos, which I don't know about you, but if I'm out there looking like I have to clean my fridge this afternoon. I just found out the coils are messed up and I don't really know how to do that. But I'm going to search YouTube for how to clean a condenser coil. And I will probably pick the 5 minute video over the 20 minute video just based on the time. I don't know if you do the same thing when you're looking on YouTube.
No, absolutely.
So I think that's an important piece there for anyone who's making videos, is it's really important to keep it short and sweet. And so this kind of almost forces you to do it a little bit, or you pay for it. But this is my favorite one, is Screencastify.
Yeah. And the ability to have that kind of automatic archiving in Google, if you're using that, and to automatically feed to an app like Edpuzzle. That's a big advantage. I mean, it doesn't seem like a huge thing, but if I'm putting together, you know, a month's worth of lessons and classes and videos, having to archive that myself, drag the files around, make sure everything's named correctly, move it into other apps, make sure the files are correct. Those things really eat into the time you have to lesson plan and put these things together.
Yeah. And I mean, I know I keep saying, but especially right now, I think the name of the game is simple and what people are comfortable with. Because as a district, I was in charge with some other people figuring out like what screencasting software should we buy as a district. And I'll tell you right now that there was like Loom is free for educators forever. And Screencast-O-Matic was a little bit cheaper, but we went with Screencastify just because if that's one less thing that teachers have to worry about and they're comfortable with, then I think we should do what makes them the happiest and what's easiest for them. So then I'm going to throw this out there. So if you are listening to this EdTech podcast, you already know this tool, so I don't need to go into it. I guess I can't make that assumption, right? But Flipgrid, are you familiar with Flipgrid?
Yeah, we just did two episodes on Flipgrid.
Yeah, so I have never, ever seen a tool go from 0 to 60 as much as I've seen Flipgrid. Like, Flipgrid's only really been around for, what, 2 years maybe 3? Mm-hmm. And it was a nothing tool. Then all of a sudden, it was the most popular tool in the world, and Microsoft bought them out. And it was like, I've never seen a tool go from, like I said, so popular so quickly. And I think that speaks to how easy it is to use and how versatile it is. So, I mean, since you already did the podcast, what do you think are the best parts of Flipgrid?
I think the best way to describe it is as a social network or a social platform for a class or for education. One of the things it reminds me a lot of is an app like TikTok. Sure. And things that young people are already using to be creative, to remix things, to share jokes, to share ideas. This felt like a very natural thing for a lot of students. And I think maybe that's why it's really catching on right now.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think that it does. I never thought about the whole TikTok angle, but you're right. It's almost like a G-rated TikTok for school.
Right. Less dancing, probably.
I guess it depends. But yeah, probably at least my class was less dancing. But so what I'll do is for our listeners, I'll just do the quickest overview, but then I'll give my just 2 cents about maybe some other things about it. It's really, really easy way for kids to make video. That's what it comes down to, is instead of a kid making a video and then emailing it to you or just putting on Drive and sharing with you, it's just a platform where a bunch of kids can make videos and they can see each other. So it's really great for checking for understanding or things like that. But some of the, just my advice with this is that don't make the assumption that all kids like to be on video, because kids these days are on their phones all the time and TikTok, yada, yada. There's still plenty of people who really hate being on camera. I would say if you decide to use this, just please keep that in mind, because some people don't want to be on camera. And so give them the option to cover their face with an emoji or a picture or something like that, and just do their voice if it makes sense, or to submit the assignment through some sort of different avenue or something like that. It just, that always gets to me is when anytime I hear kids these days about anything, I think it always gets to me. But especially when you're like, oh, they're techie, they like to be on camera, they're fine with it. And I was like, all right, well, do you guys all love being on camera? They're like, no, we don't, but kids do. And I mean, we're all people who don't necessarily love everyone seeing everything about us. So just keep that in mind. And remember too, with Flipgrid, is that you don't have to make the videos viewable to the entire class. So you can do an assignment where they have to almost make the video and you never approve it, so the class never sees it, but you could see it, which is really great. Again, just kind of for keeping things a little bit more private, depending, especially if you're checking for understanding, you might not want the rest of the class always seeing that. So just, I would say, just keep that in mind, that you can be a little bit more private with it.
One thing I've noticed as well is an app like Flipgrid that you can use asynchronously might help take a little of that real-time pressure a lot of students might feel to answer a question or to have an answer or to show understanding in real time. That can be pretty difficult, and it might give them a little bit of leeway to reflect on other students' responses, give them a little time to reflect on their own response, and actually put together that response rather than just react in the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree, which I think is good. And it doesn't have to be students. I know as the ed tech coach, I'll be using it, I don't know, next couple weeks for our brand new staff. I mean, think of our brand new staff who's coming to our school and potentially in a remote situation. Who knows what's going to actually happen? But I think it's going to be really great for our staff we have right now to actually see them and see their face and get to know them. So that's how we're going to do our new staff introductions for the rest of the staff, is using Flipgrid. So it can definitely be used by staff as well. All right, ready for my last two?
Hit me.
Okay, so my last, so those first three were like the big namers, right? So I feel like I have to say them because they are big names for a reason. So these two are a little less big namey, but I found these two are very popular in remote learning. So here's again the problem it solves. I already went off that my vision of the problem it solves. Here's the problem it solves. When you are assigning kids work, whether it be math practice, science practice, some sort of practice that's for content, you want to be able to easily see how well the students understand the material. And there's plenty of things out there. There's plenty of quiz softwares out there, which I won't go through. But this one is my favorite. And here's why, is because it's almost like, I always imagine it's like imaginary, like lever, in the sense of you can almost like scale 1 to 10, how fun and enjoyable you want it to be, with like memes popping up and games and power-ups and all the stuff to make this kind of checking for understanding way fun. Or you can tone it way down to like a 1 and have it be very serious and just give them questions and get right to the point. So I that's why I like this tool, because it lets you make it super fun or super serious, depending on whatever your use is. So the tool is called Quizizz, Q-U-I-Z-I-Z-Z. So there's a bunch out there, but the reason that I've seen so many teachers like it, like I said, is because it lets you kind of customize it to be super fun or not. But also it's so clean, the data it gives you to really check for understanding for like formative assessment. I don't think I would necessarily use this for summative assessment of like a real test or quiz or things like that. But if you're just really trying to get a quick gauge on an individual student or a class, I like it honestly better than like Google Forms or Quizalize, some of the other ones out there. I just think it's really, really easy. It can be fun for kids, and it just gives you exactly what you need. So it just has everything you need, I think, for checking for understanding in a fun way. And then my final one is, again, the problem it solves, is that what a lot of teachers had, especially math teachers, is they had a lot of practice sheets for students to work on, whether they were from a practice textbook or a workbook or PDF files or things like that. So it would be really, really helpful if they had something where they can send a picture or PDF, like a picture of the textbook or whatever it is, that kids can just write on, as opposed to having to like type it up or convert it to Word, which usually messes up the formatting. You know what I mean? Like just send a picture off to kids or a PDF that they could edit on. So the best tool that I've seen is a tool called Kami, K-A-M-I. It's an extension and it does exactly like I said. It was a lifesaver for teachers who had a bunch of paper stuff that they could just send out to kids and they could edit it up and kind of submit it right back to them. And it syncs with Google Classroom if you use Google. I mean, even if you don't, it still works fine without Google Classroom. But what a lifesaver this was for teachers, the amount of hours it saved them from having to try to retype up something or whatever it was. So it's, again, a really, really great tool for editing PDFs, pictures, things like that.
So this is converting a document into an editable format that you can send and then get back from students.
Yeah, and you can see it live. So just like Google Docs and Google Slides, where a kid's editing it on top of it, you can see it right in live time. Which is really, really nice.
Are they typing into these documents or can they draw on these with a stylus or something?
So they can do anything. They can type into it. They can draw on it. They can make video comments, audio comments. It kind of most teachers, and I think the free version doesn't do the video and audio comments, if I'm not mistaken. And there's even math text on there. So most people are typing or writing or drawing on top of it.
As you mentioned, there is a whole world of things out there. And if I'm an educator now, I might be going through the top picks and seeing how I like them. If you had to give advice to an educator about no app or tool in particular, but what they might be thinking when choosing the tools they use, what's your mindset?
Keep it simple, right. and pick the need you have the most and really get good at that. So these five tools I mentioned, there's very few teachers who are probably using all five of them. So my advice would be pick the need you have the most, get really comfortable and use that tool. And maybe that's all you use for the next month and a half as far as, or year, who knows, but start small. And then when that need is fulfilled and you have another need that you're ready to attack, then attack that need. So one need at a time for sure.
All right, that is it. That's our time for this meeting of the EdTech Club. But before I let you go, of course, let's review. You've got some homework this week. Go ahead and check out the show notes, the related readings for this topic. You'll find links to the tools we talked about and some interesting links to how you can use those tools. Plus, don't forget there's always opportunity to earn a little extra credit. Get in touch with the podcast. Send us a message. Let us know what you'd like to cover, or even if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast. Reach out to the EdTech Club at podcast@tcea.org. Of course, you can keep up with the very latest EdTech news and ideas. You can connect with other educators by finding out all the things TCEA is doing. And of course, you can do that by checking us out on social media. Just look for TCEA. Naturally, if you're a fan of this show, if you're a member of the EdTech Club, we want you to spread the word. Tell your friends and colleagues and coworkers about it. Heck, tell a stranger. And don't forget to tell the world by leaving a review or a like or a comment. Wherever you get your podcasts, it really does help spread the word. And, well, that's it. I'm looking at the clock and looks like we're done. But if you can't get enough, if you want a little bit more, if you want to keep the discussion going, don't worry. We'll be back next week with another meeting of the EdTech Club. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org. We'll be right back.